Heart of Darkness After Dark, the Tennessee Williams episode.
Yeah, that was something, man. He's, it's, you know, the only reservation I have about this show at all, because this is a lot of fun, I learn a lot, and I think people like it, but the only reservation I have is it gets sad. And I, you know, in our little break there, we had a few minute break, I was just kind of thinking about, you know, you have your biggest successes when he's what, his mid 30s to 40?
Yeah, 34. He finally broke out and he's the biggest playwright in America.
Right.
In his late 30s. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you spend the back half of your life in the afterglow of that, never quite hitting those points again, never, you know. And then not to say every day was for him was just a mess of depression, but that's rough. That's a little bit rough.
Well, you know, I don't think that any of these figures that we do are going to be spared.
No.
Their measure. I mean, this is something that we have to accept. I mean, if you don't get success, it's terrible.
Yeah. Well, that's true too. Right. Yeah. And it's not going to be like a continuous stratospheric success and then you die. Like, it's not going to work that way.
You'll be the fellow who had 24 standing ovations for your play about your schizophrenic sister.
Right.
After eating grapes out of your couch.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll be on a boat coming home from Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And then 10 years later or 15 years later, your show will close after 8 performances on Broadway because they'll gut you in the New York Times and you're done.
Right. Right. And yeah, I watched the great movie Birdman today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And not really even thinking about it, but it's very much a movie about the theater.
Yeah. It's a theater movie for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, that was very poignant. This, you know, for those who haven't seen it, Michael Keaton plays an aging actor, because he is an aging actor, who was famous as Birdman, just like Michael Keaton was famous as Batman. And so as a late career thing, he's decided to rewrite, to adapt this Raymond Chandler play, short story into a play. What's his name? The actor that comes in and sort of tries to basically take over, Edward Norton. Yeah, and they have, it's brilliant. It's actually, that film is like an acting, it's like an actor's movie.
Well, and it's famously done in one take.
One shot, one take. It appears to look like one take. Right. But you see this, you know, he's trying to do something of artistic significance, right? But the back of his head is saying, even when he sort of gets that, the back of his head sort of telling him he's still kind of a loser. And like, you know, and it's just a great film that I think expresses the trajectory and maybe what it would be like to be a successful artist in any genre, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the very best thing that you could hope for is Hollywood calls, and you get to sell out. You get to work on the Marvel movies. You get to work on Kate shit.
Right, right.
You know,
right.
And it's like, and then you get it, but you lose all the respect of your peers, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Of course,
this
we
just watched. Have you seen the movie Nomadland?
Is it good?
It's quite good. The woman who directed it is this Chinese American, and she was born in China, and she came here, which is interesting because it is as an American of a movie as you can possibly make. But it's this low budget. It's basically an art film. And her next movie is directing Eternals, the next big Marvel tentpole movie.
Right.
And it's just like, I don't know how that's going to work for you. Like, I mean, I would do it. If I were her, I'd probably do it too. But like, man, you made this like low budget, beautiful poem of a film about America. And now you're going to make cape shit? Like, I don't know how that's going to play for you.
Yeah, I really don't love the cape shit, to be honest. I just think it's just,
I'm kind of okay with it, but like, I do have
get
my
that money, get that paper. Get
that
check. I mean, in the Chinese market, they're going to, that's what it's all about.
Right.
So,
right.
Whatever it takes. I mean, in a film like that, like, what does it really mean to be directing a film like that?
Yeah, I know, right?
You know, it's like jumping in to be the CEO of a company. There's a lot already going on.
That's
you're you're going to have a big impact on it.
Yeah.
Not to take anything away from her, but like,
right.
That it's not like directing a little indie movie. I mean, it's like joining a machine.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so anyway, back to Tennessee. So you read these two, or you had these two books as your reference. They seem interesting. This James Grissom. Is it James Grissom?
Yeah, James Grissom.
That one seems quite interesting. God.
Yeah. And he's worth digging into if you just look up Tennessee Williams on YouTube. That's what I'm doing now because I'm downloading the audio to splice in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's worth listening to. He's a very funny fellow. And he's one of these cases where, you know, again, what a story. He sends Tennessee a letter and gets a phone call a few months later, and there it is. Yeah. It's Tennessee come to New Orleans.
That's wild.
And he thought Tennessee was going to give him a little bit of advice. Yeah. And it turned out that Tennessee needed him.
Right.
And so he became this, like an assistant to Tennessee and, well, having his own career. And the book is quite interesting because it reads kind of like a novel, but it's just full of these characters. I mean, when you think there's really no A-list celebrity from that period that Tennessee didn't know or know somebody who knew all the top talent. And so, you know, as Tennessee was sort of fading away, he was very worried about those relationships. And I love that idea of the fog and the metaphor of the fog and these characters come to me out of this fog. And he was acutely aware, or at least for his own idea of it, that every soul is sort of masculine and feminine. Mm-hmm. And his women characters were avatars for his feminine side. He was very open about that. And I think there's a lot of, when it's very incredible to think that, a man wrote these characters is
right.
And
the mastery of psychology and all of that is deep in those films.
And I think it has to do, in one of the biographies, one of the TV biographies, I think, well, in any case, in one of the biographies, they talk about, he really had two loves in his life, Rose, his sister, and then Merlot.
Yeah.
So a man capable of loving a sister, really loving a sister, and then a man capable of loving a man.
Yeah.
Fairly unique. And as you saw from or heard from some of the quotes, this again a very acute psychologist of the human scene. He understood.
And sensitive for sure.
Well, you know, the point that I kept trying to get across, but I missed it in the first act of my story is that, or maybe I did tell it. I mean, we went for 2 hours, but he claimed he was influenced as much by film as he was by theater.
Oh no, I don't think you said that. That's interesting.
Yeah. I meant to get that. Well, that's why you got to subscribe to the
Patreon. That's right.
but that's
interesting. Yeah. Well, we're all like, influenced by film now, right?
But he's like, I'm an American. He claims he was as influenced by film as he was by theater. But I think that's a bit of a, he's being a little bit provocative there.
Sure. Yeah.
You see his theater influences and they're all the greats and it's all there.
Well, it's got to be interesting. If you think about that time period you're writing in, the 40s, the history of film, you know, there's not that much history of film, frankly. I mean, what survives from pre-1950? We've got a list
pretty
of 10
burst.
Or 20 films, maybe.
Well, it's more than that. But,
but
you have to really be a scholar.
Yeah, right, right. You don't have that many. I mean, you don't have the 50s. You don't have the 60s.
No, you're right.
You don't have 70 years of film that has been building. So it makes me wonder what film felt like then.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, I think the experience would have been different. I think it would have been more like an event, like going to a stage play, than it is now.
Yeah,
it's a carnival now. You know.
Yeah, and
you probably get dressed up to go to the cinema. You
probably did. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know. There was probably fewer films being put out. I'm always interested in the fact that I think we used to have, at least in terms of our engagement with media, I think we used to have more of a shared narrative. Hmm. So I feel like, you know, the film would come out and maybe, you know, 2/3 of people saw it,
He really does give lie to the idea that you couldn't be an out gay man and succeed. But this is a very interesting corner of American life where it was a allowed.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he found his way to where he had to be.
So everybody knew.
Very brave, too.
Yeah. That's for sure. Yeah. He could have definitely gotten, something thrown at his head at some point.
Yeah.
But I mean, imagine it was very much like everybody kind of knew, but nobody ever really said it out loud sort of thing.
Yeah. I was reading in the one biography, the Tom biography, that he thought that it was more of a secret than it was.
It's one of those things he thought he was getting away with it. Just like, no, yo,
no,
Tom, everybody knows you're gay.
Like, why do we, and then that will of wanting to be buried at sea, like Hart Crane, my God.
I love it.
It's so over the top.
I'm a little peeved at his brother that his brother didn't at least make some attempt at that.
But his brother's clearly very sweet and clearly, like in one of the biographies, he chokes up at one point.
Okay.
Loved him. No. And he talks about how his brother was a genius. Can you imagine being Tennessee Williams' brother?
Right.
You're an accountant in St. Louis. Yeah. Oh, I'm off to go see my brother's play premiere. Oh, who's your brother? Tennessee Williams. What?
That would be tough. That would be a little tough.
Well, it's like this James Grissom character. If you're interested in digging in more, there's a bookstore in Florida that I don't know if they're still doing it, but it's on YouTube and it's him and his book. And it's so funny because his plane was delayed, so he comes right from the airport, and he's from New York, clearly, and he just looks like one of these guys that populates New York. He looks like one of the fellows that I'd hang out with up in the Heights back in the day.
Yeah.
Very nice looking guy, very fine book, but he's got his airport clothes on, and he kind of apologizes for that. But it's one of these funny things where he's a writer in his own regard. He's written a very fine book about Tennessee Williams, but the book is about him.
Another writer.
Well, it's about another writer, but it's about him on behalf of another writer getting to know Alec Guinness and getting to know Marlon Brando. And so you have all these boomers in the audience going like, did you meet Brando? Did you call Brando? Oh, just the phone, you know. And he plays it off very nicely. And he was definitely the Tennessee's Gollum. Like, do it. I'm not throwing shade, but like, all we do on this podcast is sort of in a funny way serve the subjects. But it's like, it's just like, oh, and then that's when I met Jessica Lange, and that's when I met Marlon Brando. And then you could see these boomers, like they're in a wind tunnel, their heads.
Just hitting with every pop cultural reference.
And he's like, Tennessee 10 wanted me to call, and Brando called at 2 in the morning. And everybody's just
you can see their brain starting to.
Yep, no big deal, just taking that inbound call from Marlon.
Yeah, for real.
I mean, what movie lives larger in the American psyche than Streetcar? I never really let it hit me until I worked on this episode.
Yeah, it's in there. It's in there from the title on down.
Yeah. Hey, Stella!
Frat boys know that right now.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
they don't even know what it means.
No, they just know you yell it with passion. Yeah.
I mean, I have always, what's the line? I've always depended on the kindness of strangers. I'm getting it wrong. The great line. It's killing me that I'm doing this. I'm kind of worn out. I've always depended on the kindness of strangers.
Yeah.
Get out of here. When she's saying that line, I have always depended. And she's being taken away to the asylum.
Right.
You know, and that's the thing that's let her down.
There's this
moment at the very end of Streetcar where she realizes it's not her beau come to take her away on a cruise, but it's the madhouse. And there's a woman and there's a man. And there's a man dressed almost like an undertaker. And he realizes her case right away. This is a beautiful moment in the film.
Yeah, I don't remember this.
The Undertaker character, the figure, there's a beat where she's freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
She won't go with the woman.
Mm-hmm.
He steps forward and he offers her his arm like he's taking her down on a date or on a debut.
Yeah.
And he lets her hold on to her dignity
Right.
In this squalorous situation, this unseemly, and he signifies, again, he understands it. It's beautiful because you talk about the politics, right? It blows out this idea that, oh, we're seeing a lot of these.
Right.
This is not, Blanche is not alone.
Isolated, right?
It's hard. I get chills when I think
I don't
it.
Remember that. I don't remember that
Watch
moment.
It again. Yeah, watch it. It's very subtle. Yeah. And it's just so well directed. I mean, we could do an entire episode on Elia Kazan, who's this very famous director. And
sure.
They parted ways at one point. I didn't really on this episode go too much because of the nature of our show. I didn't go too much into his collaborations and things.
But,
Interesting.
No, it was good, man. It's, he's not going to be a guy that's forgotten, but it's cool to dig in and learn a little bit about him and learn sort of his place. I always knew he had this witty, the two films I've seen, the dialogue is so sharp and it's clearly his pen and it's deep and it's profound at moments and it's deeply characterizing, but those bits you read from even his letters and his diaries and his just little passages, that note to his mother. Oh. I mean, this guy could write a sentence with the best of them, So that was kind of cool to see too.
Well, there's something about, the poetry of his language but the ability to anchor the stories in these true human, rich, immediate stories and just the how muscular Streetcar is and how you I want to watch it again. It just keeps coming back. You want to watch it again. You want to go, it's great. Those films are great ambiance. We didn't really talk about Cat too much, but I mean, Cat is like, clearly Paul Newman is gay. He's closeted gay and his lover, his wife is a beard.
Right.
And his lover died when he was young.
Right.
And he's drinking himself to death.
Absolutely.
And Big Daddy doesn't understand why.
No, Big Daddy doesn't get it. And there's always and it's always said like that, like, you're never going to get it, but it is always beneath. But there's a great universal quality to that now, right? Because then you can, every person has a disagreement with their father doesn't get. And so you can pour kind of into that, right?
Well, one of my favorite moments in Cat is when they end up in the basement together, and they're surrounded by all the antiquaries of Europe that Big Mama
had shopped for.
They bought $1 million worth of junk in Europe.
Right.
And that to me is such a wonderful metaphor on stage for the state of the theater. And it's a little bit of an attack and a little bit of a nudge and a little bit of a, he's quintessentially American.
Yeah.
Deeply consciously. So you're saying
this like sort of brought in all this sort of like cheap knockoff of like
all this like European junk. You can buy anything you want out of Europe. Because Europe was a fire sale at the time. He was joking about it. They would sell anything. I mean, the dollar, this is what we joke about all the time in the show. It's like, oh, he wrote a story for Harper's, and then he went and lived in France for 3 years on the proceeds. Like, how? Well, it's like the dollar was worth,
Bitcoin
money. Right. Bitcoin before dollar used to buy you something.
Yeah, right. It used to matter.
Right around. Yeah, exactly. So that's such a sly moment.
And I never would have caught that.
This is something as a playwright, you're always looking for these moments where the thing is more than the thing. And it's such this is where the art comes in. It's such a wonderful thing when you can concoct a metaphor that stands out like that. And Tennessee might not even, I mean, he might just shrug and go, oh, whatever you think.
It's like a beautiful, half of this stuff subconsciously. Really.
Well, it's a beautiful poetic image of, metaphorical image of this father and his son talking, because he's his son, he's Big Daddy's son, right?
Right, yeah.
Is
that how it works?
Is he the son-in-law?
I thought he was the son and Elizabeth Taylor was the daughter-in-law, but I think that wrong.
No, I know. Let's get it right. Let me see, because I feel like I should know. Cat on a hot tin roof. Yeah, it must have been his son.
Because he knew, because they were, Is he? Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was his son.
Yeah. I mean, it was in the third highest grossing film of that year, 1950.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Let's see here. With Maggie.
Yeah.
Family's Estate, Big Daddy. Yeah. Brick. What Brick. A name
that's
for
right,
a character.
That's right. Brick. I was trying to think of it. I knew it was something like that.
Yeah. That's got to be his father, of course.
Well, it's got that Southern thing too, man. Like you can name anybody. You can name people anything in the South.
That's true. Coffin. Tennessee's daddy was named Coffin.
Right.
His middle name.
Right. Well, there's a beautiful tradition. I wish I could remember this woman's name. There's a beautiful tradition of like naming girls after like a grandmother's maiden name, but giving the last name as her first name, you know? So you can have a woman whose name is like, I don't know, Berkeley or something, you know, and like, it's kind of cool.
Well, I mean, Cat has the quality of Lear a little bit. It's about inheritance. Yeah. Who's going to take it? And just this. And it is his son, of course. And you just end up like, you end up in that basement with all of the junk of the world and all of the weight of that. Mm-hmm. And it means nothing to you because you don't have love.
Right.
It's just so wonderful and so simple. It almost sounds like a cliche when you say it, but there it is on stage right in front of you. You know, he was asked in one of the interviews about like, what the unforgivable thing is, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, I think I said it in Streetcar. And it was when Blanche said the unforgivable thing is intentional cruelty.
Being cruel, to be cruel.
To be cruel. Yeah. And it's so ugly when you see that in the world.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
You see a lot of that on the Bird website.
Yeah, it's true. It churns out cruelty.
It's
for sure.
Cruelty generator.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, have you seen the cover for Cat recently?
No.
Look up Cat on a hot tin roof. It says, you know, Elizabeth Taylor, and it's like the bed is on fire.
Right.
Elizabeth Taylor, Paul Newman,
remember that.
Burl Ives. This is Maggie the Cat.
Yeah.
You know, and at one point the mother, I think it's Big Mama, you know, when a marriage is on the rocks, she pats the bed. The rocks are here.
Right.
Like, holy hell.
That's like, right.
Like, who wouldn't want to get dicked down by Brick
Yeah.
It starts so well, too, because it's like it starts with some great drunk driving.
And he's
parked by the hurdles on the old track field, and he's hearing the cheers of the crowd.
That's right. He tries to jump the hurdles, right? Yeah. He
breaks his leg.
Yep. And he's hopping around the whole rest of the time.
Yeah.
Man, and Burl Ives. I'm looking at a picture of Burl Ives in this movie at his most corpulent and magnificent.
So
his
most good.
Splendiferous.
Yeah. I don't understand what you mean. What do you mean? And then, oh my God. And you know, and if you've ever had trouble with the drink or an addiction or whatever, present company excluded, the rumor I've heard, but this guy, the writing about, we watched this last night, Brick, Newman, he talks about, I haven't had the click yet.
Yeah.
You mean click.
Yeah.
I drink, and then suddenly there's a click in my head and everything's right. And then Burl Ives, Big Daddy, goes, oh, you're a real alcoholic, aren't you? It's just right there in the play.
Yeah, right.
I am an alcoholic. Yeah. I'm going to have more. It's like, Jesus. I mean, so Tennessee was already struggling with this stuff, and his daddy was a drinker. And
Right. Yeah,
there it is, right on stage, right out there.
Right. Well, yeah, he might have heard his father have that conversation when he was a boy, you know.
The click. I like the idea of, anybody who's ever struggled with addiction, you know exactly what that is.
Yeah.
Just perfect, this idea of a click. I love in that film the sister and her little brood and how she's a breeder, but Big Daddy doesn't care. And they're all angling for the inheritance.
Yeah.
They meet him with an Oompa band or whatever. They're playing the Confederate song when he lands, you know. It's just so like pathetic.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's a great movie.
Yeah,
everybody should see that along with Streetcar for sure. Mm.
Well, so what's next for you, Brad?
We're gonna do Pamela Coleman Smith, who is the artist behind the most commonly used tarot deck. So she did all of the illustrations for that. So she was a sort of turn of the century eccentric, broad-ranging artist and pretty fascinating lady. So
fantastic. Cool. You know, and I had a lot of fun doing this one. I feel really good about it right now, which means it probably didn't turn out.
No, it was good, man. No, it was a lot of fun. Yeah it's
so,
you know, the thing is, it's not that hard to make an interesting, these are super interesting people we deal with, so yeah. A lot of it, you can just say what happened, and it's pretty interesting. You know,
we had everything. We had he had the crabs.
Yeah,
we got a crazy mother.
Yeah,
we got an alcoholic father.
Yeah,
we got a sister who had her brain rejiggered.
Yeah,
everything. We got
success, highs, lows,
you
know, homosexuality, World War II, like a little bit in there.
Might have killed himself. It's not entirely clear. Right. Yeah, drugs, alcohol. Yeah. It's almost a cliche.
It kind of is, right? But
yeah, don't be that cliche, but still. No, but also not, funny. Yeah. Funny.
Yeah.
I've covered the waterfront.
He makes whoring around sound so dignified. Like, oh, yes, well.
Yeah. All right, Brad. I'll see you. I'll see you later, sailor.
All right.
We'll do this one soon. Later.
Yep. Bye.